Welcome to episode number 32 of the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, where Christina and I interview Dr. Grant Tinsley for the second time, this time all about body composition testing. This is a really great episode for anyone who's ever been interested in getting a body fat reading and wonders what the most accurate method is. We go into all the different types of body composition measurements such as DEXA, BOD POD, InBody, skin calipers, 3D scanners, and more. We talk about the inherent error in each of these devices, debunk myths about body fat percentages, and give practical takeaways about the best way to measure your progress with or without these machines. As always, if you like the podcast and you want to support it, all we ask is that you share this episode with a friend, family member, or coworker who would benefit from it. One share can go a really long way and supports our mission to help as many people as possible to live a healthier, sustainable lifestyle. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how this podcast moves up the ranks and becomes accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode, number 32, our second interview with Dr. Grant Tinsley, Body Composition Measurements. All right. What's up, everybody? And welcome back to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast. Today is a super exciting day because we have our first ever repeat guest. So this is his second time on with us, and this is Dr. Grant Tinsley. He is an assistant professor at Texas Tech, soon to be, I saw, associate professor. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And he is a researcher on all things intermittent fasting and time restricted eating, as you guys know from, I believe it was episode 10 or 11. And now we're on episode, this is going to be either 32 or 33. So time has seriously flown by, but we've been really, really excited for this episode. And I know personally, I've had this on my list of episodes to do since the very beginning with you, Grant, but body composition testing and all things body composition measurement, whether that's with a DEXA scanner, BOD POD, skin calipers, there's a bunch of different methods, and I'm sure we're going to get really into the weeds with all of them. But first, we just want to welcome you back and just introduce your background for anyone who didn't listen to that episode. And if you haven't, go back and listen to it. But give us a little bit more background about you, as well as your background with this field, because obviously we learned how you got into time-restricted eating and intermittent fasting, but this is a totally separate thing. And you are really in depth on the research on both.
Yeah, no. Well, first, thanks for having me back. I'm honored to be a repeat guest on the podcast. So I love this topic we're talking about today, probably honestly even more than the intermittent fasting topic. I love the devices. I love the data analysis side for body composition. I think it's really interesting. It's another topic people are generally interested in. So my own interest in body composition testing started when I was a PhD student at Baylor University, and we were using a DEXA scanner. So DEXA stands for dual energy X-ray absorptiometry. So essentially, for anyone that hasn't seen one, it looks sort of like a big table with a scanning arm over the top. And to assess someone, they essentially lay down on their back, and a scan takes anywhere from about 3 to 12 minutes, depending on which mode and which scanner. But this arm just kind of gradually advances over your body, and you do an X-ray. So you see your skeleton, the different kind of components of your body. It's a very low dose X-ray compared with some other medical procedures. But we had this device, which was really cool. I had never seen one. I really didn't have any background with body composition assessment prior to that. So we used this scanner for everything. Everyone threw around terms like the gold standard in our department. They're like, oh, DEXA is the gold standard. And the reports come out really nice. The values are very precise. It goes out to a bunch of decimal places. And I was kind of left with this impression like, oh, whatever numbers this device gives me, this is like the gospel truth. This is infallible. So during that time, this study came out essentially showing how carbohydrate loading, so just increasing your carb intake for a few days, could essentially trick the DEXA scanner into thinking you had more lean mass than you actually had. And I remember being very surprised by this, and it makes sense. Like when you think about kind of what carbohydrate is picked up as on the scanner and how there's water stored with carbohydrate, it makes sense. But I was very interested in this. I'm like, okay, so the numbers that spit out from this device, they're spit out, are not perfect. There are ways this can be tricked, and that started me down a long rabbit hole there at Baylor, and then now in my own lab. I've been here at Texas Tech for 5 years, and Our laboratory has a bunch of different body composition assessment devices. I was just having this conversation with one of our students the other day, and I think we're at over 30 methods we have in our lab. We've accumulated lots of different methods. So I'm sure we'll get into some of those later, but we have a bunch of devices, and we have an interest in testing some things, maybe like we'll talk about today, testing devices that consumers might actually have access to. So just as one example, within the last month, we've started a study where we essentially went on Amazon and bought the 12 or 15 most popular at-home body fat scales, which all use bioimpedance analysis. And we're running a big validation and reliability study to look at how reliable these devices are and how accurate they are compared to our laboratory methods that we know are pretty accurate. So that's just a little bit of background. I'm happy to dive into any of that more, but that's how I got interested in this topic.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because we all have this different perception of body fat percentage and what that looks like. And, you know, I think that's really interesting, that study that you're doing now with the home scales, because I have a number of clients who have that and they're asking me, you know, how accurate is this thing? Like, should I? And this was when I was working. So for context, for all of you guys who maybe you're just tuning into this episode because of Dr. Tinsley, or this is one of your first episodes listening, I worked in the lab at George Mason for the past year, or the past academic year, working with the BOD pod scanner. So that's one of the methods that we'll talk about today, but it's a little bit more of an expensive option. And so a lot of my clients will have the, you know, $20 home scale that tells you your body fat percentage. And they're wondering, should I come in and see you, or should I just stick with this? And it was really hard for me to give an answer because there's just not a ton of data on those consumer-based scales out there yet. But I think one thing that would probably be important to do first is to just go through the different methods and the different measuring tools. That way our audience knows, okay, what are we talking about when we reference the BOD pod, the bioimpedance, the DEXA, et cetera. And then we can kind of get into dispelling myths and to misconceptions in this area.
Yeah, no, that sounds good.
Yeah. So why don't you walk us through all of these different equipment pieces and everything like that?
Okay, that's a big, I will definitely take a stab at that. So since we just mentioned them, I can start with bioelectrical impedance analysis. This is a really broad category. This might be, again, one some listeners are more familiar with. If you have any body weight scale that gives you a percent body fat or lean mass, fat mass, anything like that, it is almost certainly using bioelectrical impedance analysis. So most of these scales will also have kind of the little silver electrodes that you're putting your feet in contact with. So generally these devices work by injecting a small current into your feet. In this case, this travels through the body and is received by other electrodes. So the device sort of knows what it put into you in terms of the electrical current and what it receives, and it uses that to estimate the electrical properties of your body. So the actual values it gets are not what you're seeing on the body fat percentage. It's not truly measuring body fat or really body composition at all. It's measuring how the fluids and cell membranes in your body respond to this electrical current. And then from that, it usually estimates fluids of the body. And from that, it estimates body composition. So there are a few levels there going, and this is an important principle for any method. There's something the method actually measures. In very few cases is that actually body composition. Usually measures something that's related to body composition. So those at-home scales, you're right, we don't have a lot of data on them. It's interesting, we have data on kind of the research grade bioimpedance technologies, and some of them are pretty accurate, some of them are not very accurate, but we don't have a lot of information on these consumer scales, which is part of the reason we're running this study. Just for context, there are those, you know, $20 or $30 scales. I think the most expensive bioimpedance device we have in our lab was about $15,000. So it ranges very widely. And it should come as no surprise that the accuracy of this technology varies widely. Of course, if you can sink $15,000 into developing a machine or you know, charging that for it, it tells you something about what went into it and how well it was validated and developed. On that note, there are so the common scales people use largely just have those electrodes in contact with your feet. In our lab, and another device people might actually be familiar with, because I think a number of supplement stores have them, maybe some gyms, would be something like the InBody scale. So the in-body bioimpedance scales often have electrodes you put in contact with your hands. So you're kind of holding these little handles that have electrodes on them. Your feet are also stepping on electrodes. So now we're kind of capturing more of the body. So we're injecting these currents at different points in the body, collecting the information at different points in the body, is giving you a little more information. Some people might also be familiar with, I don't know if either of you have used the little handheld bioimpedance, like Omron. It looks like a little, on a video game controller, and you hold it straight out. And so that would be the other end of the spectrum where you're just looking at the upper body. So yeah, that's broadly bioimpedance. They all work through that same general principle, but large range of quality and accuracy. Another kind of common method, and this is one that I do recommend for people in sort of limited resource settings or individuals who want something, would be something like simple skin pulled calipers. So lots of people may be familiar, but this, you know, essentially there's certain sites on your body where you will pinch the layer of skin and subcutaneous fat and get a measurement of that skin fold thickness. I know I'm getting ahead of myself because we'll talk about kind of practical strategies later, but just looking at the raw skin folds, like the actual skin fold thickness value you're getting at different sites, can be useful, particularly for people who in the physique realm might be interested in, am I losing fat at this particular area? This is one method that, even though it's inexpensive and simple, it allows you to actually answer that question. Like, do I have more or less subcutaneous fat at this particular site in my body than I used to? In terms of kind of pivoting back to laboratory grade, techniques. I mentioned DEXA. So again, the low dose X-ray technique. The one you just mentioned, Marissa, BodPod. It's kind of I don't know, fancier name is air displacement plethysmography, but everyone will know it as BodPod. It's the one that looks like a big eggshell or kind of a spaceship that you open up this door with a nice hydraulic sound and you sit down and shut in. It seems like you're about to be launched into outer space, but it essentially operates, it has two chambers. There's one chamber in the front, kind of with a window where you're sitting, and there's another chamber in the back. And there are just some manipulations of pressure and volume between those two chambers. So ultimately, this method allows the density of the body to be estimated. So that's what it's actually measuring from that. It'll estimate body composition. The BodPod is sort of a more modern version of kind of a classic body comp method. And many individuals we test who are middle-aged or older, if they had some type of physical education class or something in the past, might be familiar with this method, which is hydrostatic weighing or the dunk tank, underwater weighing. And this method is similar to air displacement plethysmography in that you're looking at body density, but you're essentially doing that by weighing someone on land and then weighing them underwater after they've expelled all their air and tried to submerge themselves underwater. And kind of based on those differences, the weight on, out in the air and underwater, you can estimate body density. So most people like the BodPod better because you can just kind of sit down in there. You don't have to be submerged underwater. It's, believe it or not, not fun for people to blow out all their air and then get dunked underwater and have to try to stay still underwater. So it is still a decent method, and you see it used some, but it's kind of, in my view, on its way out in favor of BodPod. Let me see list. One item I really like, which I'm happy to chat about more. I noticed you had a note that they have this at, I think, Gold's Gym, and a number of gyms have these, but these 3D body scanners have become really popular. And we actually have 4 3D body scanners in my lab. And a few years ago, we ran a big study to look at the reliability and validity of these scanners. So if you're not familiar with these scanners, lots of them operate by having you stand on a platform. And there'll be sort of a column next to the platform that has sensors in it. And often these sensors are actually the same sensors that are used in video gaming systems that are interactive. So like the Xbox Kinect sensor, for example. And you get rotated around on this platform and the sensors scan you and they build a 3-dimensional avatar of your body. So once the scan's done, you have a little avatar of yourself. You can spin around in 3 dimensions, which is kind of neat. So we have several of those that we've looked at. One interesting thing about this technology is it's becoming a lot more accessible because there are several smartphone-based apps, which it shouldn't be a surprise to us with how good our cameras are on our phones, that you could also use the camera in your phone to do this. So there are a number of apps now where you can either have someone else scan you or sort of set up your phone and take a few images and it will knit them together into an avatar. So it's kind of an interesting one. And I would say on the more promising side in terms of some of the metrics it can give you, for individuals like yourself who are maybe wanting to give a accessible and, you know, potentially affordable method to a client that they could administer at home and say, send you the results and you could help them interpret and such. I'll pause there in case I'm sure I've missed maybe methods you want to talk about or said too much or too little. So I'll pause there for some feedback.
I didn't know about the phone scanning kind of apps. I'm going to have to look into that because I think that'd be really cool to implement with clients.
Yeah, no, I agree. And just as an anecdote, we have a scanner in our lab that was, I think $12,000 or so. And this company is now making an app version that will essentially be freely available with the same underlying technology, the same underlying equations that, will be free or maybe a couple dollars in the app store. But kind of neat that type of technology that wasn't really available previously can be, harnessed and used by anyone.
Wow, that's really interesting. So we have all these different methods. A quick side note too, it's funny because the first ever body fat scanner that I used was the little handheld, like the little video game controller.
Yep.
And this was when I had first started like getting into fitness and then first started personal training. They had them like at the trainer desk at my gym. And about probably not even like a year into training and just being more serious about my fitness and my nutrition, I would do a pre-workout and a post-workout reading on that thing. And like just from the water lost in my body, like the measurement would change and like I would just see how big of a difference there would be. And I would just be playing with it. I had no idea about any of this stuff, but like I was like, oh, like I'm leaner, haha, like after I work out or whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's a common experience. I've heard almost that same anecdote from several people that the same thing. It's like, it's sitting on the desk. It's right there tempting you. You're like, yeah, you know what? I'll just check again. And it feels good to see a lower number after my workout as compared to before my workout. But no, that's great.
Yeah. So we have all these different methods. And, I think it's interesting because if one were perfect, then we probably wouldn't have all of the others, right? And so when we're thinking about this, I think the main question that people ask and that I get all the time is what is the best way to measure my body fat percentage? And so I think there are kind of two ways to go about answering this question because best is really subjective, like optimal doesn't really exist, but what's best for you does. But let's look at this from like, if we could control everything and we could just basically take someone in a vacuum and look at their body fat percentage in the best way possible. You as a researcher, what would you do to test their body fat percentage? And then I guess after that, what would we do practically?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. There's a lot of layers to that. So just a couple preliminary remarks first. One thing that's important for, I think, everyone to realize is just what body fat percentage actually is. And that may seeing people like, I know what body fat percentage is, but really what these devices are trying to do is estimate the percentage of mass in your body that's made up of molecules of fat. So the molecules of the fat, if you summed up the mass of all those molecules, it's trying to relate that to your total body mass. So it's not looking at adipose tissue. Earlier, we're talking about skin folds. We're talking about how you can actually grab your subcutaneous adipose tissue. Adipose tissue is mostly fat, but it also has some water, some protein. It's a tissue that we could anatomically isolate. We could see if we dissected someone, we could see where their adipose tissue is. That's not what almost any method someone has access to is actually assessing. So that's first kind of a little caveat. Another item, and I know you're aware of this, is that we can't truly measure, like actually measure body composition in someone who's alive. Everything we're doing is estimation. Like I was mentioning a few minutes ago, often we're measuring something and then inferring several things or plugging into several series of equations and getting a body composition value. So there's kind of like a joke in body, I mean, it's not a joke, I guess it's true. In body composition research, the only way to measure someone's body composition is to dissect them once they're a cadaver. It's like truly, to be able to anatomically isolate everything. So in terms of living humans, though, what we would view as a gold standard would also vary on kind of what we're looking at. So if we're looking at, again, what most methods look at, kind of what we call the molecular level of body composition. So like molecules of fat being fat mass, all the other molecules being fat-free mass, which we could break down further into things like water and protein. If we were operating at that level, our gold standard method is a multi-compartment model, typically a four-compartment model. And these models, I think there's not as much familiarity with that term because it's not one particular device. So in our lab, for example, when we build a four-compartment model, someone has to do a DEXA scan, someone has to do a BOD pod, and then someone has to do one of our nicest bioelectrical techniques. And we essentially take the bone mineral from the DEXA scan, we take the body volume from the BOD pod, we take the water from the bioelectrical technique, and then we get a calibrated body mass. And we're essentially pulling on the strengths of each of these methods. So the thing they're kind of best at measuring, we're pulling that variable from that particular method. And all those inputs really just get plugged into an equation that will give you a four compartment model body fat percentage. So we've looked at the body a few different ways. We've looked at the water content, which is really important. We've looked at the volume, the mass, we've taken bone mineral into account. So that's why these models are viewed really favorably, is because some of the assumptions of these simpler models we've talked about, or any of these individual techniques. So if we were to look at DEXA alone, BOD pod alone, bioimpedance alone, each one of those has quite a few assumptions built in. So with this four compartment model, we essentially don't have to use those assumptions because we're looking at the body so many different ways. So generally what we do, and in studies when we're doing this, we do the four compartment model, but then we also are interested in things like adipose tissue and skeletal muscle. And for lots of us, those are the things we're really interested in. We're like, okay, I'm aware of where my subcutaneous adipose tissue is. I'm aware of where my muscles are. I want more of some of these things, less of some of these things. So normally we'll pair that four compartment model with some regional assessments. So we'll do some assessments on the upper and lower body, typically with ultrasound, where we'll be looking at some variables similar to what you get with skin fold calipers, like the subcutaneous fat thickness. But then we'll also be looking at things like the thickness of certain skeletal muscles, or the cross-sectional area of certain skeletal muscles. So that's kind of what we view as our best method or combination of methods. So we get an accurate look at the total body, but then we can also look at sort of specific tissues that we might be interested in, particularly for tracking people, say, over the course of a exercise intervention where we're trying to look if, you know, certain muscular changes have occurred or something like that. So I'll pause there before I go like the practical route. Do you have any questions or comments on that?
So the molecules of fat versus adipose tissue, that is something that was recently brought to my attention, I think from another podcast that you might have been guest starring in, but that's super interesting because we're, you know, we always view it as that plastic piece of like muscle and that plastic piece of fat that like people hold up in commercials or at trainers at gyms. And they're like, this is 5 pounds of fat and this is 5 pounds of muscle. You want this. But that's the adipose tissue, right? And so that's what we can pull out. So the molecules of fat being different is actually really interesting. And so I guess my question would be, how does that differ in terms of your results in the measurement? So like if, say, I were 25% body fat on a BOD pod or a bioimpedance or whatever uses that method, what would that be telling me versus, you know, maybe is it skin fold calipers, which would be measuring the adipose tissue directly?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. And this is on the skin fold caliper note, I'll go off on just slight tangent, but connecting to what we said earlier. So one thing I like about skin fold calipers is if you look at those raw thicknesses. So if I see the thickness in subcutaneous adipose tissue here, and you're right, it is adipose tissue there plus skin. If I look at that thickness in millimeters, this is telling me something about my adipose tissue itself. The funny thing is if you sum up all the skin folds, which is normally what you do with skin folds, if someone wants to get their body fat percentage from skin folds, you can use, you know, 3 sites on the body or 7 sites on the body, but you add up the thicknesses at each of these sites, plug that into equation, which gives you body density. You plug body density into another equation that gives you body fat percentage. So that body fat percentage, that final value you get, is actually trying to look at molecules of fat, kind of to be similar to other methods and because of how these equations were historically developed. So that's one of the things I actually recommend with skin fold calipers is don't plug it into the equations. Even though that's normal, you're like, oh, I get, you know, all my skin fold measurements, plug it into this equation, plug it into that equation, add my body fat percentage. Even though we like body fat percentage and we're kind of familiar with it, I think it's actually more informative to look, to just keep it in raw values, be like, okay, I have whatever 17 millimeters was my thickness at this site and 24 millimeters was my thickness at that site, and kind of track those themselves. Cause that will tell you one, it'll tell you things regionally. If you combine all those together and end up with one number, you're losing out on all this valuable, interesting information you collected about, you know, how your certain site in your upper body is different from your lower body and so on. So it's a little bit of a tangent, but really anything that's getting to body fat percentage is now operating with this molecules of fat idea. So there aren't really any that truly give you like percent adipose tissue, with a little bit of a caveat. So like if we were going back to lab methods, like perfect scenario in a vacuum, what could we use? If you actually wanted adipose tissue and skeletal muscle instead of say fat mass and fat free mass, you could use magnetic resonance imaging or MRI would be viewed as kind of the best option there. But that's probably even less accessible in many contexts than a four compartment model or DEXA or something like that. So, you know, outside of research, MRIs for body composition are you know, not really used. But that would be the type of assessment that could get you values of actual skeletal muscle and actual adipose tissue. And one last note, they are different things. It's a little bit of semantics. Some people might not care about the distinction. I think it's important just so we understand kind of like what we are actually talking about. But there is, of course, quite a bit of overlap between the molecules of fat and adipose tissue. So all the molecules in adipose tissue, if you looked at all of them, most of them are fat. Skeletal muscle and fat-free mass is a little different because you have protein everywhere in your body. And lots of it is outside of skeletal muscle. You have water everywhere. Lots of it is outside of skeletal muscle. So it's common for people to see like, oh, I saw a change in fat-free mass and assume all of that was skeletal muscle when in some individuals, skeletal muscle might be like half of their total fat-free mass. So sorry, that was like tangent upon tangent. So I apologize.
No, that's perfect. And I think that segues me nicely into one other thing that I wanted to touch on before we get into, okay, well, how do we practically apply body fat measurements? Is so when we're thinking about, okay, there's molecules of fat, there's adipose tissue, there is overlap. I'm curious, and this kind of goes into the discussion of like, there are these built-in assumptions that these machines have. So I know that one of them is, I believe for DEXA and BOD POD, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, of course, is the assumption of body water or how much, what percent body water there is. And so if we say go into our DEXA scan or our BOD POD having drank like a gallon of water prior, like that's going to change our measurement. Or if we come in fasted, that's going to change our measurement. And so there are certain ways that I like to recommend people go into body fat scans so that things can be consistent from measurement to measurement. So I'm curious now, is there a built-in assumption for molecules of fat? Because I know we have fat tissue in our organs. I know we have fat tissue or fat in our muscles as well to be used as fuel. So is there any sort of built-in assumption for that? Because I'm getting so into the weeds here, but like this is personal curiosity. We have body fat elsewhere other than just the places that we grab on our body and say, I want to get rid of this, right? And so it's not just belly fat and arm fat and whatever. It's we have things that, you know, maintain our vitals and help us with muscular function. So curious about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll give a succinct answer just because it would get us super far into the weeds. There are some assumptions related to fat mass. They're probably not quite as critical as the ones, as particularly the one you mentioned about water. Not quite as critical as the fat-free mass ones. The fat-free mass ones, because of the size of the compartment and how much more variable those things could be. Again, what you mentioned is a perfect example of hydration. Those can tend to affect things more. And what you mentioned with water is a perfect example. If, you know, you were in the lab here, we put you on the DEXA scanner, you got off, you drank over a safe amount of time, a gallon of water, and you got back on, essentially all of that would show up as lean mass. And it could trickle over into errors in the fat mass itself. But at the simplest level, it'd likely be that you'd have similar fat mass on the scanner, much higher, decent amount higher lean mass because of that gallon of water, which would artificially decrease like your body fat percent number, largely as a function of just having more lean mass. But yeah, on the fat mass, there are some assumptions baked in. We don't focus on quite as much as fat-free mass because the fat-free mass assumptions we know are variable within groups and individuals. We know can be manipulated or violated due to things like eating, drinking, exercising. So yeah, we typically focus more on that side, but yeah.
Right. Okay.
let's go back to where we were, because I was like, I was just really, really going on that. But so the practical way to measure body fat, obviously a lot of this has to do with what someone has available to them in their like local area. But what would you say, I guess, if they have a number of these machines around, and you know, maybe they are somewhat on a budget, or you know, they're just really invested in their journey though, and they want to know, okay, what should I do to get my body fat percentage? Should I drive 2 hours to the nearest DEXA? Should I go to the local bod pod? Should I just buy the home scale? Mm-hmm. What would be your best answer for that?
Yeah, for that, I'm going to start kind of at the ground up. I'm going to start at like very little resources up to like if you have some of these around. So first off, like as a very affordable, practical, I'll recommend a very affordable and practical method. I'll say if you don't have access to something that's at the quality of, say, Bod Pod, DEXA, laboratory grade bioimpedance, like one of the nicer bioimpedance or above. So if you don't have access to something like that, I would give some thought to whether or not you actually need to be assessing body fat percentage itself. Not that you won't be measuring your body, and I'll mention those ways in a second. But again, Skinfolds being a good example, that's something that's very inexpensive that you can do, where you can get a value that means something to your body, that means something to you, like if you're trying to modify your physique. But you might not, it might not be as advisable to plug the numbers you get from these skinfold thicknesses into a bunch of equations and get some body fat percentage that may or may not be accurate. So starting kind of at zero resources, first I'd say pairing with whatever else you do, I think there is still some merit in estimating body weight. So we know that, you know, tracking body weight changes alone is not ideal, and that it could certainly be misleading. But if you can pair a body weight measurement with some of these other simple techniques, it can help you interpret in context. So body mass measurements, you were getting to this a minute ago, or it's come up, I guess, a couple of times already. But whatever you assess, it should always be standardized. The absolute ideal is after an overnight fast, after you've voided, haven't had anything to drink. You know, in the morning, fewer things have happened to your body that could mess things up. And we've done some research on this, but the later you go in the day, the more things that have happened, whether it's eating, drinking, physical activity, whatever it is, more things have happened that can mess up many different techniques. So it's hard to get away from first thing in the morning being ideal. So first thing in the morning, say body mass estimate, and then two very simple methods that I recommend. One is the skinfold calipers. The other is circumference estimates. So both of those, I mean, you could for $10 or less get what you need: a flexible tape measure, some decent but cheap calipers. And there, the nice thing about this is you can track a variety of body segments. And if you have something as simple as the skinfold thicknesses and or circumferences and body mass, you can make some decent interpretations. So simple example would be like, let's go with a classic scenario where, say, someone was tracking their body weight and they were discouraged or frustrated because it was staying, you know, just flatline, absolutely the same over time. So someone may be seeing that, they're like, okay, my body mass is very steady, but they're looking at circumferences and they're like, okay, wait, my waist circumference has actually been decreasing. My upper arm and thigh circumferences have been increasing a little bit. And let me think about what's happened. It's like, oh, I increased my protein intake because Marissa and Christy told me to, and I've ramped up my training. And I'm doing this because Marissa and Christy gave me this great program. And it's thinking about it and be like, okay, so my body mass is staying the same, but I might be losing fat in certain areas, might be gaining muscle at other areas. And now this person has a lot more information and is likely more encouraged and just has better feedback about what's actually happening, as opposed to if they were just looking at the scale and saying, wait, this program's not working because my body mass isn't changing. Exact same thing with the skinfold calipers. You could see, okay, or say someone is bulking, so to speak. They could be looking and say, okay, my body mass is increasing. I'm concerned. I don't want too much of this coming from body fat. And they're like, okay, my skin fold thicknesses at these different sites are staying pretty much flat. It doesn't seem like my subcutaneous fat, at least, is increasing. My body weight is going up. My performance in the gym is going up. My strength is going up. It's like, okay, it's reasonable to infer that I'm gaining weight, hopefully primarily from lean mass, hopefully primarily from muscle. You know, my performance increases would support that. The lack of increase in subcutaneous fat thickness would support that. So, I mean, you could have something with just body mass if you wanted to do all three. If you're, you know, really gung ho with circumferences, skin fold, and body mass, you could have a ton of information without ever really getting a true body fat percentage. So that's kind of one I'd recommend if you want to be like, so for someone that's pretty meticulous about it and really wants to look at this, but again, sort of limited resource setting. If you do have access to, say, a lab or a testing facility where you could periodically get a more advanced assessment, whether that's BODPOD or DEXA, you certainly could do that. I would recommend the same things, get the most bang for your buck, especially if you're paying for this as a service. Make sure you've standardized identically each time you go back. If you're going to go every 6 months and say, I just want kind of a big picture check-in with a more advanced method every so often, I would, you know, get the maximum value out of that. Understand there's still error in those devices. They're not perfect. So still interpret in the context of these shorter term assessments you're doing, even if it's something as simple as body mass and circumferences. So that's kind of the big picture on the limited resource setting. Do you have other questions or things you want to chat about there?
Well, I was going to say, I think when it comes to a client asking, or just someone in general saying, you know, what is the best method? Well, I think it's important to ask, well, what are you trying to measure? What is it that you're looking for? What are your goals? So if you have someone who's just a general pop, like lifestyle client who just wants to get a good idea of their body fat and just seeing how it progresses throughout their time with the diet or just kind of over time in general, I think it's fine to have those, you know, little scanners or the scales at home, because it's a general measurement that you can kind of get a decent idea if it's going up, if it's going down. And it's like, what if it tells you it's 18? Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you might be 18%. It might be off a couple here and there, but it's still something that you can kind of track the trends. But I think it's important if maybe we are a bodybuilder, we're a competitor. And so if you do a 3D scan or something like that, and you can see, well, actually, it looks like my left arm is a couple inches bigger than my right. And that's something that I might not have been able to see in pictures. But now I have a good idea that maybe I need to, I have a little bit of, I'm not as symmetrical as I thought I was. So I think it kind of just getting an idea of what the client is looking for, and that can kind of point you in a better direction.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I'm glad you brought up the at-home scales again, because one thing I was going to mention is I know some people like them, and it is a good point of feedback. One thing that I think is helpful for anyone using those methods that are, honestly, this is true of any method, but especially for these methods that we know might not be quite as accurate, would be to kind of view their body fat percentage as a range. And I think some people have an idea of this, but again, going back to even, you know, when I was a graduate student, I'd see DEXA spit out a body fat percentage and it looked so precise, and I knew this was an expensive machine. It was easy to think, okay, 18% is 18%. But then if you have this concept of, okay, there's some error in the device, like say for DEXA, it was very good. It was 1.5%. You'd still have this idea of like, okay, this could be 16.5%. This could be 19.5%. And this idea of a range, and knowing that small changes within that range may or may not be real. So for someone with an at-home body fat scale, something I think that can be useful is during a period of weight maintenance, this could be a week, just say like, okay, I'm going to hold everything steady for a week just to get to try this, would be every morning, exact same way, you know, like standardized, fasted, all this, assess your body fat percentage and do that, say, every day for like 4 or 5 days in a row, where you know there are no true real changes going on. It's very short term. You haven't gained or lost a large amount of, say, fat or muscle during this time. You're keeping things at maintenance, calories, you know, all this. And just look at how much the numbers vary. So if over the course of, like, say, 3 to 5 mornings in a row, you're like, okay, I've ranged anywhere from 16 to 20%. I know that just day to day, I could see these fluctuations of, like, maybe I think I'm 18, but this could be 2% higher, 2% lower. And just keeping that sort of error of your own device, your own procedures, keeping that in mind and saying, okay, if I'm seeing these swings, I know that for me to be really confident a real change has occurred, if I'm tracking over the course of weeks and months, I would need to see a change about that size or larger. So, you know, if they're, you know, doing something, they're like, wait, I thought it's 18%, I'm now 19%. That doesn't necessarily mean, oh, you've increased body fat. You know, you can think about, it's like, wait, no, I know I've been tracking calories well. I feel better. I feel like I look better. You know, getting all these other points of feedback, can be useful. So anyways, that idea, I think, of just sort of interpreting as a range and having some concept of there is some error built into the device, and I really need to see a change larger than that error to be confident something real has happened, can hopefully be helpful for some people.
Yeah. And I think that's so important to note, like you mentioned, the best DEXA out there ranges, you know, 1.5% above or below. That is still, you know, I think a lot of people put a lot of stock or weight into one certain body fat percentage. So, you know, maybe a male wants to be 10% or sub 10%, or a female wants to be 15% or sub 15. And I think it's really interesting how our perceptions of what this body fat percentage should look like actually play out. And a lot of that goes into, okay, well, where did we get this idea, this concept of 10% body fat? And a lot of times it's like, well, the guy on Instagram that I follow said he's 10% and he looks like this. And I'm like, okay, but also you're not him and you guys have different genetics. And so, you know, maybe you hold more fat in this area and he holds more fat in that area. Also, maybe he's only posting shots of his front and he holds the majority of his body fat in his love handles where you can't see them, right? And so there might be a number of things that kind of contribute to, okay, well, what do we actually perceive as this body fat percentage that we're striving towards? And is that taking away from our enjoyment of this pursuit? I think that that's really important to note, because a lot of times I can see people getting really hung up on, like, as a female, maybe they want to be under 20% would be something that I've heard a lot, is like, I want to be under 20% body fat because that's athletic and lean and healthy. And, you know, when I see that, and this client is getting healthier, they're getting leaner, they're the best they've ever looked, the best they've ever felt, they fit better in their clothes, they clearly have less body fat, but then they go get a scan and it tells them that they're 27% body fat for whatever reason. And then they're immediately discouraged. What is that really doing for us, right? And so I think you mentioned earlier in our email thread, you know, you were curious as to whether or not we use or encourage body fat scans with clients. And I really think, for me at least, it's something that I will encourage if someone can really remove themselves from the attachment to a specific number, you know, and really just, like you said, looking at it as a range and looking at it as something that just changes over time. So what we really want to see, whether it's the bod pod, the DEXA, your scale at home, you want to see a change over time if you are standardizing that measurement and you are going the same way every single time, every measurement, and you're seeing that number, ideally, you know, if you're trying to get leaner, decrease over time, or hold steady if you're trying to gain lean muscle mass, rather than looking at it as, I must be this percent and that is my end goal in life.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. In the same way that you know, people can tend to obsess about a number on the body mass scale, just the body weight scale. And we say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't take body composition to account this and that. Okay, we've moved to body composition, but now you can still be just as obsessed with the body fat percentage and number. And unlike body mass, there's more error in assessing something like body composition now that we're, yeah, splitting body mass up. So I think you're totally right. And I completely agree on the multiple points of feedback. And whenever we're, you know, discussing body composition and talking about kind of practical take homes, I always, even though I love body composition testing, I think it's really interesting. I'm always like very discouraging of making like a large programmatic change if body comp is, say, the only variable apparently trending in the wrong direction. Again, particularly with these small changes that may or may not even be real. It could just be, you know, error of the device, or even if you feel like you standardize, something was different that you didn't realize day to day. But if you're like, huh, I look better, like you were saying, I look better, I feel better, my performance is great, you know, all this, but, you know, body fat went the wrong direction. Let's scrap everything with the program and try something more extreme. Yeah, I think that's a dangerous situation to, about dangerous, suboptimal situation to be in.
Yeah. And that's why Marissa and I take a lot of biofeedback from our clients. So it's not just the weight that we see on the scale. We don't, you know, you have to get your body fat measured. We don't do that. So we're still looking at pictures. How are you feeling? How's your energy? How are you sleeping? Like, how is your strength in the gym? How are your workouts? Because that's super, super important information. Because a lot of times Marissa and I will have clients who throughout, you know, 3, 4, or 5, even 6 months, maybe their weight doesn't change at all. And if you were looking at just that, they might be like, well, this program didn't work for me, but then their pictures show a completely different story. So I think it could be the same thing where they take their body fat, maybe pre, during, and after, and it doesn't change or it goes in the wrong direction. They're like, oh, well, this program didn't work, but it's like, yeah. No, look at your pictures.
Yeah, no, that's neat. And that's just as one, I know we talked about it and it's interesting, as one plug back to the technology, that's one thing I think is really interesting about the 3D scanners is they do have, you know, the equations to give a body fat percentage, but sort of similar to what I was saying with skin folds, I would not completely discourage it, but think about not using the body fat percentage, but just looking at the avatars, because, you know, pictures are useful and you can try to standardize it, but the avatars are very standardized on the positioning and everything. So you can see, even at, say, body mass hasn't changed, like you were just describing, see, okay, I see how your body shape has changed, which is likely reflective of, you know, these body composition changes. So yeah, I think there's definitely a place for like some use of technology, but those, like you're talking about, holistic interpretations and kind of putting everything in context and not jumping too far based on one body fat test.
And the avatars are pretty interesting. I feel like they're fairly accurate, at least just from like, so I remember I did one before I did a prep and I think it was my 2020 prep, but I remember I filmed it and I remember looking at the video and then looking at my avatar and I was like, wow, like that is like spot on.
Yeah. No, it's pretty neat that our nicest scanner was actually, it came from the fashion merchandising industry. So I think they're common, particularly in Europe, in higher end clothing stores where you go in and you do a scan and it saves all your measurements. So it's like, okay, I want this, whatever, this dress, this outfit. And it's like, you have my measurement. So it custom makes them based on the measurements from the scan. And they are very, very reliable for those circumference estimates, and very reliable for the volumes also. So yeah, it is kind of interesting. Something that's bridged that I think was very good in fashion merchandising. They would use it in military also for like uniform fit. Or I have a student in my lab who I think they used them at Disney when he worked at Disney for their like outfits and everything there. They would scan them and have all their measurements and then just custom make their clothes based on this. So no, you're right. They're pretty good on those actual measurements. So it is kind of neat from here, from the physique side, to just be able to kind of visualize in 3D. It can tell you things that like one number, like 20%, doesn't necessarily tell you.
Yeah, that is so cool. And I think I really like how you approach this, Grant, because even though you have all this fancy technology, it all comes back to what changes are you seeing in your body? And so the way that you describe the skin fold, you know, you're a fan of the raw measurements. And so that's literally just, you know, in this one measurement, in this site on my body, how is this changing over time? What does this mean for me and my progress? And then when it comes to the avatars, you know, you're visualizing it. And all these different methods, you're still coming back to, okay, well, like what change are we seeing over time? And like, how can we look at this in a way where it actually means something rather than just throwing a number on someone as a label? And I think that that's really important. And it kind of goes back to how Christina and I said we, you know, manage our clients. And again, you know, I don't push a body fat measurement. If someone has a scale, if someone has the access to a place, I'll be like, sure, why not? You know, if you can look at that information and take something from it, that's great. I'm here for it. Send it over. But I'm never going to be like, you have to do this because this means everything. And so what we do is the circumference measurements, like you said, photos, like Christina said, and body weight. And from those three things, like you said, you can have an amazing amount of information just from those three things alone. And I love that you have literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, if I'm not over exaggerating, of technology, and you're just like, yeah, just go buy a tape measure and you can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, no, and it's part of the difference between when we do a research study, like say going back to intermittent fasting, if we're wanting to see if this changes body composition, there's certain things we have to do on the research side and certain things we definitely want to do if we're talking about groups of people. But when you get to kind of the side working one-on-one with clients, like from practitioner to client, it's a different story and there's more room for kind of holistic interpretation. You know, I don't think we could get a research study published if we were like, oh yeah, we just subjectively assessed the avatars and like 75% of them looked better after, you know, this intervention. But when you're working with a client one-on-one, especially if that is the end goal, they're like, I want to, whatever, change my shape. I want to look better. I want to feel better. I want clothes to fit better. You know, it is, it kind of changes the conversation. So no, I appreciate that. And we do try to kind of bridge the gap between, you know, rigor in the research side of things and, you know, how do groups respond to things, while also considering like, okay, what does this mean for an individual, and trying to make it, you know, the information relevant to individuals who are just wanting to improve their health or physique or whatever it may be.
Right, right. So I wanted to go back just a little bit on the machines themselves and the inherent error that we have with all of them. So you mentioned about 1.5% on a DEXA, or maybe just the best DEXA out there. What about the other measurements that we have? So we have the bod pod, calipers, in body. Do you know much about like the range of error that we have there? Because I just want to give our audience like just a snapshot perspective of like how much these things can range from within themselves and then compared with each other.
Yeah. So there are, and you just hit on it with that, the last part, there are kind of two ways to view this. So one is how accurate is a device relative to a gold standard method. So for most of these methods, that's looking at as compared to say a four compartment model. As a quick side note, you get into some issues like where manufacturers will say, oh, our error rate is 2%. And you look back at it and they've used some other method that's not actually a gold standard method to supposedly validate their device. So you have something being compared to something that isn't the gold standard, that isn't necessarily correct. And it just kind of becomes a quagmire. But yeah, so one is how accurate they are relative to a gold standard. The other is how reliable they are. So like how much will you get if your body was just the same, how much will you get the same values over and over? And that's kind of the idea I was getting at when I said, if you have an at-home scale, and Christy, you were saying this, you're right. If someone gets 18%, it may not actually be 18%, but if they're trying to track their change over time, that may not matter. What matters is, can the scale tell that it increased? If it went from 18% to 21%, are we confident that's real change, or vice versa if it, you know, decreased? So yeah, there are a couple levels there. So I won't go too much in the weeds. There are a bunch of different metrics to look at this. So even when someone says the error rate, it kind of depends on which metric you're using, how high of a bar you want to set. One really common method or metric used to compare the accuracy of a device compared to a gold standard is called the standard error of the estimate. So many devices, if you hear without anyone saying anything else, like, oh, the percent error on this device is 2%, they're likely talking about the standard error of the estimate, or it's also possible that they're not sure what they're talking about, which is, you know, that happens too. So for the standard error of the estimate, if we're just looking at kind of an overall percentage, you could actually, you know what, I won't dive into that side of it. Just if you're looking kind of an overall error percent metric, yeah, for DEXA, I threw out 1.5%. It's actually, the published literature on it is a little bit higher. It's more like actually 2.5 to 3% or so, even for DEXA, which is a really good method. Bod pod and hydrostatic weighing have both been estimated at around 2 to 4%. In our lab, bod pod was closer to about 2.5%. We've done some validation studies. We did one a couple of years ago with like 170 people from the community to kind of get a big picture look at, with our specific procedures, our specific devices, how accurate they all were. So in our study, both the DEXA and the bod pod were around 2.5% error. So again, in terms of interpretation, this is one that, this percent error is interesting. It tells you something about the device itself, but I wouldn't use as much as the reliability data. So like if someone gets a DEXA BiFAT percentage of 15%, that could mean that they're 12.5% or 17.5% on a four compartment model. How much that really matters for them to know that or to think about that range as compared to a four compartment model, I'm not sure if it really matters. The one that I think could be more useful is the reliability. So again, going back to the home bioimpedance, just as a very simple example, if you did it took these assessments completely standardized, exact same way, 2 days in a row, and the body fat percentages were 1% different, you could say, okay, when no real change has occurred in my body, other than just, you know, like minor biological changes day to day, I could see a change of up to 1%. At a minimum, that person should be thinking, okay, if I see a change, like even if I'm saying doing this once a month, if I see a change less than 1%, I need to remember that I could see this large of a change due to nothing happening, due to 24 hours passing and nothing crazy happening. So in terms of someone tracking, I think it's more useful to, even if you're not calculating a formal metric, to have some idea from it. If you have the availability, again, home bioimpedance is a good example. If you have the availability, do some repeat testing over such a short duration that no real changes have occurred and just see how much it varies and know what that percent is. Do I need to know that anything less than 1% might not be real, anything less than 2% might not be real? Kind of interpret accordingly. So, sorry, I got off on the reliability aspect. Back to the accuracy. So yeah, lots of these like good individual technique lab methods, often around the 2 to 3 up to 4%. If we're talking about like bod pod, hydrostatic weighing, even DEXA, Bioimpedance can vary a ton. So some of these devices could have like very high, like say 5% or higher errors. Others could be pretty low, down to like 3%, maybe 2.5%. Those are generally the more expensive, better validated devices. Not necessarily the one that you could, you know, just order off Amazon or something. As one side note there, we are testing a few devices. They're kind of in an in-between category where they're, say, $150 to $350, where they're expensive. But for a super interested client or even like a coach who has in-person clients, it might be something that would be, you know, affordable and useful for a practice. So I'm hopeful that some of those devices might perform well enough that we could actually recommend them and say, okay, you don't need the, you know, $14,000 lab version of BIA. Here's a $350 one that it's still an investment, but this, you know, would be a lot more accurate for your clients or something. Let's see. And then Skinfold calipers, that's one that it's so hard to put a number on it because it depends a ton on how good the assessor is. So more than almost any other method, you know, how you grab the skin folds matters so much. So with expert assessors, it can be as low as like 3.5% up to say 5% or so. But if you're talking about kind of an introduction to exercise science lab where a student's like grabbing skin folds for the first time, it could be so high that you don't even really want to look at it, whether it's the raw skin folds or the body fat percentage. Last one I can think of, if I forgot any, just let me know. The 3D scanners are an interesting one. Their overall error, so the standard error of the estimate, was about 4%. It depended on the scanners, but I know you mentioned, I think you mentioned Gold's, and they use what's called the Steiku scanner, which is one we have in our lab. Its error was about 4%. But the interesting thing is when we looked at the reliability, so that part that I was saying, I think matters a little bit more for someone tracking, it was incredibly precise. So I won't go into the calculation, but what we call the precision error, which is kind of an overall metric like that for reliability, it was 0.5%. meaning it was super precise. When we did just what I'm recommending, we scanned a bunch of people one day and the next day, the largest differences we were seeing were about 1% body fat. So for something like that, we don't necessarily care that the error is 4% relative to this for a compartment model. We know that it's very precise. So if this person is seeing a change of 1% or more, they can be, you know, relatively confident that's a real change with this method.
Wow. Yeah. And also to add into this, let's make it even more nuanced. These are under the assumption that everything is standardized, right? So it's the same from day to day to day. So, you know, add accidentally having a glass of water in there, add, you know, not going to the bathroom in there. Maybe you had a high sodium meal the day before, hard training session, and all of this is a little bit invalidated. Would you say that's correct?
Yes, with just a minor caveat that most people, even when we try to standardize everything here, we don't always get down to the level of granularity of like, how much sodium did you have yesterday, this and that. We'll do kind of the, okay, you've abstained from exercise for 8+ hours, often 24 hours. You've, you know, abstained from food and fluid overnight, all that. So even in these metrics, there's probably some amount of variation due to, you know, what people did the days prior. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If someone is just, you know, walking into the supplement store and they see they have an InBody there at 4 p.m. after they've been out and about like living all day and they jump on there. Yeah, these error metrics are not taking that type of variability into account.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really important to note too. And I know personally, I'll give an anecdote. So I did a BOD pod because I obviously had access to it for the last year, but for pre-diet phase and post-diet phase. And I tried really hard to do like everything that I could. So if I pulled out my BOD pod report, you could see on the first one, I actually wrote down like a bunch of things about the day. I was like, it was this time, it was, you know, at this, I was wearing these clothes, and I even wrote down the phase in my cycle that I was, because I know that there's differences in like how much water you hold and how bloated you are, depending on where you are in your menstrual cycle. So I wrote that down and I actually made sure to test like as close to that point in my cycle as I could. And so I was able to see a good percent decrease for my whole cut, which was really awesome to see, and minimal lean mass loss. And for me, like, someone who's very science interested, someone who's very, you know, I coach others, like this is obviously something that I care a lot about. For me, it was worth it to take all those extra steps, right? Like, so I didn't have any water, didn't have any food. I will say driving to the lab that morning with no coffee was one of the hardest things that I've ever done. But yeah, so for me, that was definitely worth just the time investment of like making sure that I did standardize it from measurement to measurement. And, you know, the clients that are coming into that lab, they're paying, you know, $60 to $75 for one measurement. And so that, I mean, that's a substantial amount of money. So like, definitely make sure that you're taking those measures. And especially if you're going for a more expensive one, like the DEXA usually ranges a little higher than that, at least in this area that I live in, you know, make sure that you are making sure to standardize it as much as possible. Like, obviously you can't control some things, but just try to keep your diet relatively stable. If you have macros or calories that you're hitting, try to hit those, keep water the same, go to the bathroom first thing in the morning, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. No. And that's a great anecdote. And that's great way to do it.
Yeah. So I don't think there's much else that I had to touch on this episode. Christina, am I missing anything big?
Well, one of the things I was going to kind of mention is I think that especially for us and for a lot of our clients, like we're very focused on body fat percentage because we have an aesthetic goal or we want to look a certain way and we're following a program. And so we want to see, did we make progress? Did we not? And so I think it's also interesting to point out though, that a lot of these scans can give you a lot of information about your overall health. So not just aesthetics, but for bone density, like that's super important to make sure that your bones are in a good, healthy spot. And not only that, but visceral fat too. So you have someone who might appear to be very lean, but maybe on the inside, maybe has some things that aren't going on that need to be kind of fixed or adjusted. So I think it's important that it's, you know, if you look at, or if you're listening to this episode and you're like, well, I think I look good, so I don't think I ever need to get a scan. I think it is important to every now and then, or maybe, I don't know, once in a blue moon, or maybe Grant, you have a different perspective on this, but just to kind of make sure internally things are looking okay.
Yeah, that's a great point. And yeah, all the items you just mentioned would be, you know, you could assess via DEXA. And that's another good thought about the devices. It's like, okay, what are they actually assessing? Again, 3D scanners, we've said they're cool and this and that, but at the same time, there's nothing internal to your body that's being assessed. It's collecting, you know, visible and infrared light off the surface of your body. Whereas the DEXA scan, it's like, yeah, I can look at my bone mineral density. I can look at different segments of my body under the skin, can look at visceral fat. No, so I think you're absolutely right. And DEXA probably has particular strengths, again, for the items you mentioned. And I think, as you know, with this population who maybe you're often, you know, going through intentional periods of energy deficits and items that could potentially have adverse effects on bone health, particularly if repeated over time, it is something really important to look at. And yeah, not just assume everything is good because you're hitting your external aesthetic goal that, like you said, once in a blue moon, or, you know, periodically in some fashion, yeah, looking under the skin and with more of a, you know, focus on health. And many physicians, I've had this experience, like if we give people their DEXA outputs when they've gotten a DEXA done for research, you know, their primary care physicians are happy, they are impressed that they've had this testing done and happy to see those reports and help them interpret. We obviously don't diagnose anything, but we help people interpret the reports and know kind of what they mean when we do these tests. But then, yeah, they have a record, they could take it in and maybe their physician sees something, you know, either they're concerned about or something. It's like, oh yeah, you know, you have osteoporosis that runs in your family, your bone density looks great. Yeah, so I think that's a great point, kind of the health aspects.
Yeah. And I think that applies in particular to, I think, the probably skinny fat type of body type, because obviously like those types of people probably aren't super concerned about being overweight, but at the same time, they might have, you know, a disproportionate amount of body fat or really low bone mineral density. So maybe if someone who's listening to this identifies with kind of that category, then that's a really good way to kind of get a metric of like, okay, well, I'm thin, I fit into like these size pants and I feel good and confident. Okay, but is everything, you know, setting you up for the long term for your health, and especially with aging, osteoporosis, sarcopenia, all of that that we're trying to prevent by living a healthy lifestyle now. So I think that's like one specific category that probably touches on for DEXA scans being really beneficial.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, not to go off on a little tangent, but I feel like sometimes for like you mentioned, Marissa, that body type of the skinny fat, they're like, well, I don't need to work out. I don't need to run. I don't need to do anything because I look okay. But, you know, there is that side of bodybuilding and resistance training and cardiovascular that does help your health in general. And I think there's a bonus of you look a little bit better, but I think it's important to do something and be active in some certain way.
Yeah, absolutely. So Grant, is there any topic in this realm of things that we are completely missing, or anything that you wanted to add on any of these points that you think is really important for our audience to hear?
I don't think so. To me, I think we've hopefully addressed the topics at a appropriate depth level. I mean, there are plenty of weeds that we could explore, but I think currently as the conversation sits, hopefully it's a good introduction to some of these topics, and hopefully a good level of detail and just some thoughts to think about for people who may be assessing body composition. So no, I don't have anything major that I'd want to jump in with at this point.
Awesome. So just to wrap up with some key takeaways, I want to just hit on them. We already touched on them, but I want to just go over them again so that we know what we're walking away with here in this episode. So first and foremost, focus on a measurement that you can take reliably over time and focus on that change over time. So a method that's practical for you, that might be getting a scan or an advanced method every 2-3 months or so, but it also might just be taking body circumference measurements with a tape measure. Focus on changing over time. So if something says you are 25% body fat, focus on that number going down if you want it to go down, rather than you fixating on the fact that you are this specific number. And just remember the visual changes are so important, and the changes that you feel in your clothes and the changes that you feel in the gym. There is so much progress to be made outside of numbers. And I think we can get really carried away with numbers, especially, you know, the listeners of this podcast. Like, clearly you're an hour into this and we've been talking about measurements and percentages and numbers. You clearly like this, and that's okay. That's awesome that you're really into the data, but don't get carried away by it. And another thing that I brought up earlier is, you know, one person's 10% body fat or 20% body fat is going to be very different than another's. We all carry fat very differently thanks to our genetics. Some of us curse our genetics for it. Some of us thank our genetics for it, but that's just the way that it goes. And so ultimately, fixating on a specific number as your end goal is probably not going to look the way that it looks on your favorite Instagram model. So try to focus on your specific change over time in you rather than someone else that you're just watching and idolizing. And then finally, like we went over, all of the methods that we have gone over have their own inherent error. So focus on your body fat percentage if you're going to do that as a range and not a specific 1-point number that can't change, because it will fluctuate and vary depending on what method you're using day to day and over time. Any other takeaways?
I endorse that message. I don't think I need to add anything.
Great. Grant approves this message.
Yeah.
Awesome. I was just going to say for our listeners, again, if you are new and you haven't listened to Grant's previous episode, it's actually episode number 10. So I would recommend going back and listening to that, especially if you're interested in learning more about his background. And it's also just a really good episode in general.
Yeah. More misconceptions debunked there for sure.
Yes.
Yes.
Awesome. Yeah. Christina, do you want to close us out?
So thank you guys so much for listening to another episode. If you haven't already, make sure you're subscribed. You can find me on Instagram at Christy Lynn Fit. You can find Marissa at Marissa Roy Fitness. And Grant, if you want to tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yeah. So on Instagram, I'm Grant_Tinsley_PhD. I have a website that actually has pictures and information about a bunch of the techniques we talked about and pictures from our lab showing what we have, if you're interested in that. It's just my name. So granttinsley.com. Information about research we're doing in the lab. And again, if you like this stuff, you can see what all these devices look like if you're not familiar with them.
Awesome. Perfect. And we'll have all of that information in the show notes in the description. So you can find him there. And thank you guys so much for listening. We'll hope to see you back next week.
Thank you so much for listening to the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast, and we hope you enjoyed this episode and learned something from it. Please remember that Christina and I are not medical professionals, so if you're going to make any changes to your exercise or nutrition routines, please consult with your doctor or medical team first. Finally, we would love you even more than we already do if you took the time to leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Ratings and reviews are how this podcast moves up the ranks and becomes accessible to even more people. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next Tuesday here at the Barbell Lifestyle Podcast.